From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, Eric Snodgrass will be here to tell us about the weather forecast for the Midwest and what that heat that's supposed to develop will really look like across the Corn Belt. We'll do all of that right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, first, thanks so much for joining me at 8 a.m. to do this discussion as I'm taking some time off today to go out west in North Dakota to visit some barley producers and watch their harvest. So thanks so much for allowing me to get that time off. I appreciate it.
Glad to do it, Todd. I'm glad to be able to stay with you on Fridays and talk to you. You're real good about keeping us on the schedule, and I appreciate that.
All right. So let's talk about some things that have happened this week so far. We saw some FC Stone numbers. I think there are some numbers also from Farm Futures, maybe?
Yes. We are starting to get a little bit more of a trend and defining trend versus the USDA crop conditions. And you know, that's probably the best place to start our conversation when we talk about these yields by these two firms, is that crop conditions once again disappointed the bulls, did not drop as expected. And so when we look at these two crop conditions numbers, or these two yield numbers, I think it's important to keep the crop conditions in the back of the mind. But right now, Farm Futures is at 175.4 on corn and 49.8 on beans. That matches almost identically to the blog update I did after my Central Corn Belt tour last weekend and posted on my blog on Monday on the website. FC Stone coming in at a much more aggressive clip, 178.1 on corn, 51.5 on the soybeans. Obviously, these are heavily predicated upon the weather of the next 10 days, but if that 51.5 bushel yield number were to be realized, we're talking about a carryover level that would be approaching 900 million bushels, Todd, if we used USDA's July figures for everything else. And so it really shuts the door on the potential upside in the soybeans. And that's where the weather really comes into play, is that we really need a dry weather, essentially a ridge of high pressure to set over us another 10 to 15 days, so that the trade starts to draw back on their yield expectations in soybeans, especially, again, because of these crop conditions. In part, our expectations are so very high.
These, of course, are numbers that are looking forward to next week. So a week from today, in fact, USDA crop production report. That's the first one of the season. Do you have expectations other than what you've already told us about?
I think the big expectation will be on the soybean exports. We are not keeping pace with USDA. Our commitments as of this week, which is week 47 in the marketing year, we're up 5% on corn. We're down 4% on beans. USDA has us down about a little over 2% on their soybean exports. So unfortunately, we are starting to show that the trade battles, and I don't want to call them a trade war yet, but we're entrenching this mindset. And other than the wheat market, the corn and bean buyers are very much hand to mouth and not wanting to push themselves out more than just what they absolutely need right now.
Speaking of that, the Chinese, along with the American president, have taken steps again this week to bolster their positions. The president announcing roughly another $200 billion worth of tariffs on Chinese goods, potentially. And the Chinese are coming back and saying, well, we can't match that 200 because we don't import that much, but another $60 billion in their minds, and that pushed the soybean market lower today.
Yeah, it did. The Globex session Friday morning really started to feel the pain. New weekly lows with that $60 billion announcement by China. I think the key here is what you brought into the picture about what China can and cannot do The U.S. went from 10% to 25% on the $200 billion. And so the Chinese said, okay, what can we do? And they're going as high as, I think I've seen as high as 50% tariffs on certain products as part of this $60 billion. So they've got several different tranches, 50% tariffs, 25% tariffs, 10% tariffs, so that it totals up to be $60 billion. Bottom lining this out is it's not getting better between the United States and China when it comes to the trade. And as I'm going to write this weekend, I'm going to make a pretty strong geopolitical case, Todd, that this is more about North Korea. And if the soybean farmer in particular wants a good end to this and not to lose any more demand and to have this shut down, this fight shut down before the midterm elections here in the United States, we really need to wish for the Chinese to participate more with North Korean negotiations in a better way. When we saw the U.S. missiles, or excuse me, when we saw the U.S. intelligence agency say that North Korea was starting to up their missile capability again and start work on their missiles, I almost felt as though, okay, that right there is probably why we're not going to get this trade war solved, because there is a triangulation there, I think. So we're back to putting the 200-week moving average in the meal in play, and that's only about $3 away from Friday morning's close.
Anything else on that? And then, of course, wheat.
Yeah, you know, thank goodness for the wheat. No, I don't want to beat a dead dog on that on the Chinese U.S. trade. I'm glad we have the Europeans. We need NAFTA now, especially Mexico. But it would be nice to get the NAFTA total with both Mexico and Canada. That may be a hard push. But yeah, thank goodness for the wheat. And it's been 4 years since we've been able to say that the wheat has been able to support us. We're in the middle of a really nice cycle up, and we were able to feed the bull with the demand. We actually have, for the first time again, I think in probably 4 or 5 years since 2011, I think the memory serves, is that we have countries extending their buying. They're worried about the supplies, and they should be. We had a all-time record high in Seoul, South Korea on Wednesday, and we're now starting to see the national news carry, the traditional national news on the three major networks carry the European drought. So it's getting out there. The market's pricing it in. There was a hiccup on Thursday where the Ukrainians posted on Twitter or Facebook something about agricultural export quotas. That was taken as they're going to instill those. And then they walked that back, said, no, that's not what we meant. We do this every year. And that really left the chart hanging on Friday morning or Thursday afternoon. So I would not be surprised to see a break in the wheat here, especially if the dollar continues to go higher. We're starting to see the dollar jump as a safe haven more because of some of the issues with China and the United States. So I think that's going to play more in the wheat market. And I hit my overvalue level in the July soft red wheat for 19 of 615. That's the place where I want to start getting some hedges in places for clients.
Hey, thank you, Mike. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Let's check the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agrible. Looks like we'll have some heat, Eric. What do we know about it?
You know, the first thing we should talk about here is that this time period here at the beginning of August is really showing up as a time period of low predictability. And what I mean by that is that what's complicating the forecasts that we're getting from our longer range models, those that go at about 2 weeks, is that there's a lot of interesting activity going on in the Pacific Ocean that is continually changing the dynamics of the flow of the jet stream. And you know that the flow of the jet stream is everything when it comes to understanding our chances of precipitation, our chances of seeing below average or above average temperatures. And here's kind of the big picture. We were watching for quite some time this little feature that was going through Alaska. It was a trough and was forecast to come sliding down right over the Pacific Northwest. But instead, each new model run that's come out over the last 4 or 5 days keeps sliding that trough further to the west, keeping it off the west coast. Now, what does all that mean? It means that the heat that was potentially going to be here and the dryness that was potentially going to be here in the Corn Belt is now, for the most part, out of the picture. That trough, as it slides off further to the west, keeps the heat in the western United States, which is a problem because the western United States is on fire and they're dealing with a lot of drought issues. They're dealing with a lot of extreme heat. And we're not getting any relief from that at all. So where's the heat going to be in the next few days? Well, it's certainly going to be in the central plains as well, and it will extend east here over into Illinois. We're going to see some high temperatures that will get up into the low 90s, at least through parts of the weekend. So it's going to be a warm weekend, but not the dangerously warm weekend. Michigan. The thing we really want to know is, are we going to be getting any precipitation into a few regions that have been relatively dry? So, for example, the last 15 days or so, the northern half of Illinois has been relatively dry, although they had great precipitation leading up to that 15-day time period. But also remember, it was also cool during that last half of the month of July. Also, parts of Iowa have been quite dry. So we have a couple systems to be watching. We're going to watch the first one roll up out of Colorado today, moving across parts of Nebraska, getting into Iowa, and then getting into parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin. So that's the trajectory on the first system. There's then a second one that's going to be following that, that's coming on the shortwave that's going to dip down through parts of South Dakota and again hit Iowa. So if we were doing this recording in Iowa, I would say, hey, we got a couple of pretty good chances of getting some rain, which would be great to finish off this corn crop and then really help the beans get through the month of August. Unfortunately, around Illinois, it doesn't look as though we're going to be getting much precipitation in here, at least through the next 4 or 5 days. Maybe by Monday into Tuesday, we're watching another system kind of sneak through the northern corn belt, bringing a cold front that's going to sweep through the area. Now, the good news is, nothing is shutting off the moisture from the Gulf of Mexico. And what I mean by that is, if we don't shut down the moisture transport, then we could still have these pop-up thunderstorms that happen just in the afternoon heating. So you're going to find out, a few places are going to be getting some rain just from these pop-up thunderstorms. And they're very, very hard to predict more than, 5 or 6 hours in advance. So we do have chances of rain that are coming up, but it's certainly not going to be one of these things where I could confidently tell you, oh, by the next week we're going to see an inch of rain, which we would really, really like to see, especially throughout the northern part of Illinois. Southern Illinois, the southern half of Illinois, had this beautiful storm system 2.5 days long last weekend that just slowly but surely soaked the fields. It was really a lifesaver there. Now, when we look longer term, I'll tell you this about 2018, at least August 2018. Remember, in 2017, we had this pattern that shifted that ridge out west and left it there. And we saw our 10th coolest August on record here. This is not going to be one of those. We're going to see up and down temperature patterns as we continually watch the position of the jet stream from here all the way out into the Central Pacific Ocean. What's going to continue to throw a monkey wrench in it? Well, the Pacific Ocean gets active, really active this time of year with typhoons, and they can really perturb the flow of the jet stream. So that is certainly going to be the thing that we're going to watch most. You're going to hear a lot of meteorologists discussing those things. So just quick recap. We are going to see some warmer temperatures the next few days. Our best chance of precipitation probably coming in on Monday into Tuesday, so I'll have to be watching the cold front that's moving into the north. But that cold front will be bringing in some reprieve from the heat, taking us out of the low 90s and bringing us back down into the 80s. So that's good. And remember, Gulf of Mexico stays open. About the last thing that I want to make sure that we discuss here is what's going on in Europe. We've been kind of giving you updates about the heat and the dryness we've seen from basically France all the way over to Poland and up toward the UK. And so we've really beat down on the quality of the wheat crop that's there and also other grains and other crops that they grow. So the UK is really struggling this particular summer with drought. And that drought does extend over into the Russian wheat belt and parts of the crop that's grown in Ukraine. So we have to keep a very, very close eye on that. But a lot of neat things to be on the lookout for here. But certainly we're going to see some warmer temperatures over the next few days. And I think that'll be quite a change of what we've had over at least the last month.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.